She loved trying things on with the dressing room curtain half open and had a talent for plucking the sexiest items from the rack. Shopping was for her an act of rebellion against years of Catholics being formed in a religious congregation. Her mother thought she was in Rome to study with the nuns. We met in that ancient city, at a tiny boutique with rows of fake snakeskin pants and sweaters that looked like trench coats. She stepped out of the dressing room in a tight denim skirt and bathing tee with sparkles and crescents between her breasts, and I imagined tracing the lineage with my pinky. A thin, angular sales girl yanked down the skirt so it hung low on her hips. Veronica eyed herself in the mirror, palming the vulcanized fabric as if it were a sheet, as if she were on a photo shoot. I wondered what the denim felt, sandwiched like that between her hand and thigh. She pivoted to look at herself from behind. I was mesmerized. I liked that word. Franz Mesmer was an Austrian physician who believed all ailments stemmed from a misalignment of internal magnetic energy. Patients seeking realignment attached magnets to their limbs and drank iron, or held ropes tied to a magnetized tree. Mesmer would swing his hands close to their bodies in a series of furious passes, conductor of his own symphony. In his care, people were said to faint, convulse, speak in tongues. He called this animal magnetism. Veronica, head twisted over her shoulder, caught sight of me in the mirror. She turned around and, in an American accent, as if we'd known each other for years, asked me if the skirt was too revealing. I felt a rumbling in my chest, was afraid my face might betray the heat beneath my skin, a vestige of pediatric trauma. As a child, I was constantly pink-skinned and sweaty-palmed, boiling from the inside out. It grew worse whenever anyone looked at me. Veronica's stare was magnetic, mnemonic. I found it soothing, like a nursery rhyme. My words came involuntarily. I'd been hypnotized, mesmerized. I said, you should buy that outfit and never take it off. My father is a shopper. He could spend hours sifting through aisles of suits, coats, ties, and slacks. He loves the feel of virgin tweed between his fingers, the starchy smell of fresh cotton shirts. He also likes to watch people shop. When I was 13, he bought me a red dress. It was short-sleeved, silky, and to the knee. A sash of white satin belted above my pubescent hips. They were round and embarrassing, normally buried beneath layers of corduroy and flannel. But in that red dress, there was no hiding the peaks and curves. Trying it on, I saw myself in the mirror, cold and goose flesh. My face was no longer pink. 3 years earlier, I had an operation that left my skin as transparent as cigarette paper. But my forearms and shins bore the purplish scars of one who started shaving too young. I was on the swim team. They said without hair, you swam faster. The other girls in my dormitory at boarding school shaved too, for boys. My father watched me throw back my shoulders and suck in my stomach as if seeing me for the first time. My body was a surprise to him. It was surprising for me to surprise him. An uncomfortable tingling crept into my neck and cheeks. I wanted to cry. I'm turning pink again. But I barely cried, not from the burning of my soggy red face, nor the wet palm prints I left on the surface of everything I touched. Of the estimated 5 million sweat glands in the human body, 2/3 are located in the hands. As a child, I couldn't understand what made my millions of glands different than everyone else's. I was afraid to touch anything that didn't belong to me, afraid to write on the chalkboard or return a rubber ball that had been kicked out of bounds. I thought I would never hold another person's hand. Doctor after doctor said the condition was benign. My father, himself a doctor, didn't give up. He carted me to specialists throughout the world, daring anyone to fix my skin. At 10 years old, I had experimental endoscopic surgery in Germany. My mother returned to the States a week after they had sliced into my back and severed the sympathetic chain. My father stayed the whole 4 weeks. Afterwards, we visited Berlin before the wall came down. My father explained about borders that pitted brother against brother. He cursed the war that had taken his father. He promised he would never let that happen to me. Remembering his words, I relaxed into the red dress and saw in my father's eyes my transformation from tomboy to young woman. At that moment, I knew what I felt for a while. Something other than a child, I was ripe, blistering in hormones and curves. My father told me this without words. He knelt down next to me and lifted the hem above my knees. His thumbs grazed my skin. He smelled like a Christmas tree. I was human. He smiled up at the woman who owned the store. A short hem is the style these days, they agreed. How he knew so much about style, my mother and I never asked. He spent most of his time in surgical scrubs. That day, both of us staring at my lustrous red reflection, my father told me red was the color of revolutionaries and romantics. The two together made love, she said. To wear red was valiant, risky and seductive. My father knew about these things. He worked in trauma. I had only the vaguest ideas about life then. Could barely make sense of my father's words. His gray-green eyes sparkling at the sight of me all dressed up and no place yet to go. The red dress. I knew only that when I peered into the mirror at the dress shop, I saw someone different from the girl who slouched across the hills of the academy in corduroys and bit her fingernails until they bled.